Okay, so I want to start probably in a way that I don't think I've ever done before. I want to share with you a poem. It's a poem by a famous Israeli poet, Rachel Bluestein. Anybody ever hear of her? Okay, you shouldn't feel bad. I only found out about her because I only figured out who she was by checking Google. Anyway, she was a famous Israeli poet. She's probably the only thing that we would be able to connect to her is she was buried right next to Naomi Shemer. So we're probably more familiar with Naomi Shemer. So it's an amazing poem. And it goes like this: Bishakvar Yamim Hayoyev HaNorah, many years ago, the great enemy at Shomron Hivi, he laid siege to Shomron. Arba Mitzorayim La Basu Besura. There were four Mitzorayim that came and told the news about what had happened. Kishomron b'matzor, kala aretz kula, ukaved harav minaso. And when Shomron was nowadays, now today, bismanenu, when this is Rachel Bluestein writing this at whatever, when she lived, when Shomron is once again under siege, the kaved harav minaso, and the hunger is really great. Achani lo oveh b'suragula. She says, I would not want Geula to come, or the mention of Geula to come, if it's coming from the mouth of a Mitzora. Hatahor Yivaser, right? A pure person should announce the Geula. Yigal Hataor, and a pure person should redeem us. If his hand does not come to redeem us, as nivcharli lin polmim sukadamatzor, I would rather fall to the harsh suffering of this famine, or liyom besurah gadol, the night before the great redemption. Okay, so that's what's going on here. It's a little weird. So what this poem is actually about Arhav Torah that we're, God willing, actually somebody pointed out to me, we're not going to read this Haftorah this Shabbos. We would read this Haftorah this Shabbos, except this Shabbos is Rosh Chodesh, so the Haftorah is from Yeshaya. But were it to be that we had Watcha, that it was a regular Shabbos, so what would happen is this would be the Haftorah of Tazuyah Metzorah. So what's going on here? Rachel tells us in her poem, right? She tells us that she doesn't want Geula to be mentioned or to be brought by way of the Mitzorayim, like in Arhav Torah, but she wants the real deal. She wants the Geula to come through a pure and a tahor source. What's going on here? So Rabbi Alex Israel suggests the following. He says, is it possible that Rachel is a purist and feels that if it can't be perfect, if you can't have the perfect geula, it's not worth it at all? That's the question. Is that what it's all about? And then, if that's really the case, the question then becomes, how does this mesh with the Torah's perspective? Right? The Torah's perspective on geula. So how does the Torah feel the same way? So that's what I want to try to figure out tonight. I want to try to figure out tonight how the Torah expects Geula to come. So before we get to end to our Haftorah, I want to take a look at a Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's actually Tzadi Chet Amud Aleph, not Tzadi Tet Amud Aleph. And the Gemara goes like this: I'm Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Rabbi Shua ben Levi says the following. So Shnaim Reiti v'kol Shosha Shamati. I just wanted you to see that it's Rabbi Shua ben Levi. It is the one in the story. So Rabbi Shua ben Levi had a meeting with Eliyahu Navi. So Amar Leh, he said to him, Eimat Ati Mashiach. When is Mashiach going to come? Right? Rabbi Shua ben Levi wanted to know, when is Mashiach going to come? I think we could all appreciate that. I've said this a few times already, but this is a year where we sort of like, maybe for the first time, really felt that when we opened up the door, Eliyahu was going to be there, and sadly not. But okay, Eima Adi Mashiach. Eliyahu, when is Mashiach going to come? So Amar Lei, Zil Shaili Lididei. So Eliyahu says, I don't know, go ask him. V'heicha Yasiv. So the Gemara, so the Rabbi Shubin Levi asks Eliyahu Navi, well, where does he sit? If I want to find Eliyahu Navi, where am I going to find him? So he says, Apischa, there's two girsas of the Gemara. One is Apischa de Romi, at the gate, the city gate of Rome. And the other one, which is actually the Gemara's girsa, not the one that's written here, is Apischa de Karta, at the gate of the city. What's the sign that I'll know him, right? Meaning you ever go to the city gate, you know there's more than one person there. So he says, Yasiv Beine Aniye Sovle Chaloyim. He sits amongst the lepers, right? So the Melech HaMashiach, right? Mashiach is sitting amongst the lepers. The Kulan Shari V'Siri B'chad Zimna. All of them are taking their bandages, right? The bandages off their tzaras. They're taking all of them off to clean them and change them. They would take off all of their bandages in one shot and then put them all back on in one shot. But Ihu Shari Chad V'Asir Chad. But he, Mashiach, would open one up and put the next one on. Meaning he would take off this bandage, replace it, take off this bandage, replace it, and so on and so forth. So Amar, why? Why did he do that way? Dilma b'ba'ino, because maybe Mashiach would be needed to come to Lo Yaakov, because Mashiach did not want to have to delay even a moment. So who's Melech HaMashiach? Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Eliyahu is telling us that Melech HaMashiach is what? Is a metzora, a leper. So Azal Legabe, so Rabbi Shubin Levi went to him, Amar Le, Shalom Alecha, Rabbi Mori, says Shalom Alecha, my teacher and my master. So Amar Le, Shalom Alecha, Bar Levi. So he answered back, Shalom Alecha, son of Levi. So Amar Le, Le'emat Atimar. So Rabbi Shubin Levi said to him, no, when are you coming? So Amar Le, he said, Hayom, I'm going to come today. So Ata Legabaihu Eliyahu. So he comes, now Rabbi Shua ben Levi comes to who? He comes back to Eliyahu Navi. So Amar Le, my Amar Lach. Eliyahu says, what did he tell you? So Amar Le, Shalom Alecha Bar Levi. He greeted me by saying, Shalom Alecha, the son of Levi. So Amar Le, Aftecha Alecha V'Lavuch La'al Madiati. That is a proof that you and your father are both Pnei Olam Haba. The fact that he calls you that way, Shalom Alecha, by your father's name, that's proof that you're both going to Olam Haba. So Amar Lei, so Rabbi Shubin Levi says, Shakure Kashakar Bi. Right? He lied, though. To Amar Li, Hayo Matina. Because he said to me that he's coming today, V'lo Ata, and he didn't come. So Amar Lei, so Eliyahu says, actually, it's not fair, because he didn't lie. Mashiach could come today, in the kolo tishmo, if the Jewish people were to listen. The Gemara makes it very clear that Mashiach is not like Rachel said. Rachel, this poet who has this idealistic view of what it means for Mashiach to be coming, and I don't want it to be anything impure, I don't want a mitzvah, and yet the Gemara makes it out to be what? Melech Mashiach lives among the lepers. So that's our starting point in the Gemara, for the Gemara. Now I want to take a look at the Haftorah. Now this Haftorah is a Haftorah we've done before, it's been a couple of years, but we've done it with Rabbi Riskin. I actually was a little bit like, when I read this article, I was like, sounds somewhat familiar, but I did check, and I don't believe that we ever heard this, but it's a fascinating, fascinating analysis of the Haftorah. So anytime we read the Haftorah, we have to ask ourselves, what's the Kesher? What's the connection to the Parsha? So what we're going to see is that in the very first words of the Haftorah, perhaps we have the answer. V'arba anashim hayu mitzoraim. There were four people, and what were they? They were mitzoraim. So four people were mitzoraim, petach hashar, at the gate of the city. So you're going to say, of course, what's the connection? So our parshiot, Tazuya Metzora, all about Tzaras. And here it is. We have four people who are Metzorayim that sit at the gate of the city. Vayomru Ishel Reyehu. And each one says to his friend, Manachnu Yoshim Po Admatnu. They say, what's the purpose? Why are we sitting here? What's going to happen? We're going to die. Imamarnu Navoayir Varav Bayir. If we can go into this city and they let us in, we're going to die. There's a famine there. Vim Yashavnu Po Vamatnu. And if we stay here, we're also going to die. Vata Lechuvin Iplal Machane Aram. What should we do? Let's go throw ourselves at the people of Aram. Im Yechayunu Nichye. Vim Yemitunu Vamatnu. Let's go and throw ourselves there. If they let us live, then we'll live. And if they kill us, we're already dead anyway. Fine. So Vayakumu Baneshef Laivol Machane Aram. They go in the evening to go to Machane Aram. Vayavor Kitzei Machane Aram Vine Ein Shamish. And they go to the Machane Aram and there is not a person there. So that's pretty crazy. They come. This is Aram will eventually destroy. This is just for context. This is in the Northern Kingdom. The Northern Kingdom in the time of Ahav, Aram laid siege. And it looked like they would defeat the Jewish people, the Northern Kingdom, that is, and then miraculously they disappear. But the people thought that they were really gone. But what happens? Pasuk Vav, Hashem Hishmiat Machane Aram Kol Rechev Kol Sus Kol Chayil Gadol. They bring a huge army. Vayomru Ish El Achiv Hinei Sachar Aleinu Melch Yisrael At Malchei Achitim At Malchei Mitzrayim Lavo Aleinu. So the assumption was, right, these brothers, these Mitzorayim, what do they say? They said, we know what's going on here. This is a trap. The people of Aram, right? Oh, I'm sorry, no, I apologize. The people in the camp of Aram heard all this noise, this terrible noise, and what they said was, oh my God, you know what the Jewish people did? The Northern Kingdom somehow made an alliance with the Chitim and with the King of Mitzrayim to come and attack us. And Vayakumu Vayanusu Baneshef, Vayazuat Aleyam, Vitsuseyam, Vechamoreyam, Machanek, Asher Hi, Vayanusu El Nafsham. And so they just pack up and they leave in a moment. There's stories that in 1948, when the Israelis were kind of emptying out, trying to empty out some of the Arab areas right around the old city of Yerushalayim, they would make like terrible noises, massive explosions, and the Arabs were so afraid that they would like mamish just get up and leave, and like as their houses were, there was no packing up, they just ran out on the spot, and that's really how they find the camp. Right, they see, they leave it exactly as it was. Why? Because they ran for their lives. They come to the edge of the camp. They go into one tent. They eat and they drink. They take some silver, some gold, and some clothing. And then they go into another tent. They go and they bury it. And then they go into another tent. And then they go to the next one and they do the same thing. They take some food, they take some gold, some silver, and clothing, and they bury it there. Why would they bury it? Right, so they caught by who? Right, so there was fear that maybe they would be caught by Aram. I'm going to take off my headset. I hope that's okay. Yeah, there was fear that they'd be caught by Aram. So they hide. But who else could they be caught by?
Israel.
Right, the Jews can come and show up. And if the Jews come and show up, so they're afraid that what's going to happen? They're going to get themselves in trouble for that as well. So they bury stuff. You usually bury something when you're hoping that I might not be able to access it now, but I'll be able to access it at a later day. If anybody shows up, whether it's the Jews, whether it's Aram, they'll be able to say, like, listen, we know where we marked our place. We'll come back here, whether it's tomorrow, whether it's in a week, whether it's in a month, and all this stuff will be there. So then we get to Pasuk Tet. And Pasuk Tet is fascinating because you see that this is the beginning of the transition of the Mitzorayim. And I'm curious, when we read Pasuk Tet, what the sense is about who they are. So Vayomru Ishal, not who they are in terms of people, but who they are in terms of character. Vayomru Ishal Re'ehu, one turned to his friend and said, Lochein anachnu osim hayom, what we're doing today is not right. Yom b'sorahu, it's a day of salvation. V'anachnu machshim v'chikinu ad or haboker. And we are, right, what are we doing? We're waiting till the morning, mitzaunu avon, and we're going to be found as sinners. V'atalechu v'navo v'nagida beit ha-melech. So instead, what should we do? Let's go and tell the house of the king. So where are they coming from in this? Is Pasuk Tet coming from an altruistic point of view, or is it coming from more of a self-preservation point of view?
Altruistic. They're concerned about their reputation now.
Altruistic.
It seems mixed.
It's not about the reputation, that's selfish.
It seems mixed.
Oh, sorry.
Right, so right, so the beginning of the pasuk, right, that's where it's like so unclear. At the beginning, like, I don't know, when I mean, Rabbi Alex Israel has a slightly different take on it, but I'm not really sure. And honestly, I mean, we've learned these psukim like in depth, but I didn't really look at the mefarshim on it. But I hear what Greg is saying, because Yom B'sorahu, right, they're saying, God is saving us. How could we not tell the people? So let's wait till morning, right? Stop there. Well, why would they wait till morning? Because you'd be an idiot to go back to the camp at night, right? And then possibly get attacked as, like, you know, being mistaken for marauding troops. So fine, I get it. But then at the end of the pasuk, what does it say? It says, because if the Jews show up in the morning and they see, you know, what we've done, so what's going to end up happening? We're going to get ourselves in trouble. So it really depends on where you put the pause. Is it Yom B'sorahu and we're going to wait until the morning? Or is it Yom B'sorahu, stop, if we wait till morning, we'll be caught as sinners? So which one is it? The answer is it's probably a little bit of both. So what happens to them? There is a sense that they recognize everybody's starving to death in the city. And here it is that they found all this food. How could it be that they are taking all this stuff rather than being honest and saying, we got to tell the rest of the Jews? So let's look at how the rest of the story plays out. Pasuk Yud, Vayavo Vaykruel Sho'er Ha'ir. So they go and they call to the watcher of the city, right? Because the city is, the gate is locked. Vaygidu lahem leimor, banu amachne aram, v'in ein sham ish, v'kol adam, kim asu sasur, v'chamor asur, v'olim kasher hema. And they say, there's nobody there, and there is the voice of man is gone. All that you have there is the horse that's tied up, the donkey that's tied up, and the tents as is. Vaykrash sho'arim, Vayigidu Beit HaMelech Penima. And so they call the people in the gate, and Vayigidu Beit HaMelech Penima, meaning the word slowly travels from the gate all the way to the center of the city, which is where the palace of the king is. Vayakam HaMelech Laila, and the king gets up at night. Vayomer Levadav, Agida Na Lachem Eit Asher Asu Lanu Aram. So they say, listen, I know what Aram is playing at. Right, Yadu kireivim anachnu. They know we're starving. They've gone out of the camp to hide and ambush in the field. They're going to catch us living rather than having to lay siege to the city. The easiest way to win a war back then, right, was laying siege to the city. It was easy because you had access to all the food and all the water, and you just had to wait. But it also is the most time-consuming, right? Like nowadays, you drop a really big bomb on a city, and in about, you know, moments, that's the end of the city. Back then, you didn't really have that. So what you had to do is you had to wait and wait and wait. And depending on how much they had in the city in terms of food and water and rations, that's how long you would have to wait. So there's a recognition that, you know, if it's easier if they can kind of like woo us out of the city to get us. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayanecha Me'abadav. So one of his servants says, Vayomer, Vikhuna Chamisha Minasusim Hanisharim, Asher Nisharuba. Let's take five of the horses that are left. Let's send some spies out to see what's going on. They take two horses. So they say, go to Machne Aram and see what's going on. And they go all the way back till the Jordan. And the entire way is full of clothing. Right, the people of Aram, they threw their clothing as they were running. I guess they're running through the desert, and they don't want to be burdened by the heavy clothing and the armor that they're wearing. And so in their haste to leave, they just dropped everything along the way, and they kept running. And so the word goes back to the king to let him know what happened. And so the people leave and they plunder and loot Machne Aram. And the amount that it cost to buy food drastically decreased. Now, if you remember the other Haftorah, the Haftorah for Tazria, starts off where there is also a proclamation, or it ends rather, with a proclamation that Naaman, after becoming the head man and being cured of his tzaras, so there was the price of grain went up ridiculously high. And that's where our story begins. So when our story is over, right, the price of grain was deflated once again. And, you know, kind of like oil this week that became, you know, from, I guess, not so expensive, but to like almost, you know, cost nothing. That's the same thing that happened here. But the Haftorah is not over. And this was as was predicted by Elisha. Elisha said that the price of food would go down. So there was this one officer who had said, what are you talking about? I don't believe it. It's not going to happen. Could this really be? And Elisha had said to him, you'll see it with your eyes, but you won't get to eat from it. And this guy is there, this shalish, this officer is there. And so he is, as the nation comes pouring out of Shomron, there's the shalish right in front of them, and he gets completely trampled. They run him over, and he dies on the spot, and Elisha has the final word, and it does not happen. Okay, what's the connection to the Haftorah? The Haftorah, the Parsha, what's going on here? So what would be a connection? Anybody want to take
aside from
Mitzorayim? I mean, Mitzorayim is a connection, but what else? Any other thoughts? So, I think that you can take it one step further. Meaning, what is a mitzora? Right? How does one become a mitzora? So, let's assume that the main avera that you get that gets you tzaras is what? Lashon hara. What's so bad about lashon hara?
It hurts you and the person you're talking about.
Okay, so it hurts you and the person talks about how? Because it damages relationships. Right. That's what happens. We're all quote unquote a chevra, and by me saying lashon hara about someone, what I'm doing is I'm putting a wedge in our relationship, and somehow I'm distancing someone. So if I were to talk negatively about one person in the Chabura, then all of a sudden that person would not feel comfortable, because if they showed up on the Zoom all of a sudden, what would happen? It'd be very, very awkward, right? So that's what I'm doing. I'm creating a wedge. I'm damaging it. So what does God say? It's fine. How do I get back at you, so to speak, for Lashon Hara? So I'm going to distance you. I'm going to kick you out of our chevra. And when you're out of the chevra, what you need to do is you need to reflect and say, oh my goodness, look what I had, look what I gave up, look what I lost. And the hope is that by doing that, when you rejoin the community, so you'll be in a stronger and a better place. Normally, when you say this, it's like a nice vart. But like the truth is, like in where we're living, and not in where we're living, but in the times that we're living in right now, I think we know and feel it so much more, right? Like our entire sense of community has been lost, right? Even if you don't like going to shul, and I'm sure that not everybody loves going to shul, but shul is a communal outlet. And yet you don't have that anymore. So that's what we're missing. That's what the Metzora basically is told. It's told you put a wedge in the community. And so therefore what happens? You have to be distanced from it. So is that really the case? Is that why this Haftorah is? You have these Metzorayim. But it's not 100% fair. Because the four Metzorayim are Gehazi and his sons. Now Gehazi gets himself into trouble and does things that, you know, he gets cursed for. And he gets cursed with Tzaras of Naaman. But what do his kids do? They don't really do anything wrong other than the fact that they're connected to Naaman. So is it really fair? So perhaps, says Rabbi Alex Israel, there's another possibility. What we want to do in this Haftorah is to recognize that sometimes, which doesn't really 100% connect to the parasha, but at least it gives a different perspective on the Haftorah. Sometimes the people in the community itself, they're actually the problem. And they can't see that there is a problem in their community because they all live in their community and they're all doing their thing. But you need someone who's outside of the community who sees the whole thing and says, hello, I think you need to take a really good deep look at what you're doing. But Alex Israel suggests that they needed the Geula to come from the Mitzorayim. They needed the Geula to come from outside of the community because they couldn't see the problem inside the community. I think it's possible that, you know, a way of looking at it is either, again, sometimes the problem is so embedded within the community, you need somebody from the outside to give a good look and say, you guys don't see it because you're like entrenched in this, but let me tell you, there's a major problem in your community. Fix it or your community will cease to exist. Or I think it's also possible to say sometimes it's really just that in the craziness of life, we're not able to see it. But when we become less busy, which the Mitzorayim were, because they were just sitting there, they're able to see it much better. So that's a possibility. And he says that's really what the Haftorah is all about. The Haftorah is just recognizing that the perspective from without was better than the perspective from within. That's a possibility. But there is a famous article, which we did do many years ago, by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik gave a famous drasha called the Yom Ha'atzma'ut and the Mitzorayim. He asked a very simple question. He said, how is it possible that the Geula or the Medina, right, Medinas Yisrael could come into existence by the people that brought it into existence? You know, I said this last night. I gave the same shiur to the women in Janie Cooperberg's group. But I think it's a good point that like popped into my head as I was saying this. The people that founded this country, the United States, on many levels were more frum than the people that founded the State of Israel. It's a pretty crazy notion, but they were more, some of them here were more steeped in the Bible than the people there. So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said, how could it be? How could Geula come that way? So he says the following. It's a much longer speech and article, but I'll give you one paragraph. The first argument as to how any relief for the Jewish people could be realized through the medium of apikorsim, non-believers, can easily be rebutted by the precedent of the deliverance accorded to the people of Samaria through the medium of the four lepers. This episode shows that no Jew can be excluded from the grace of God, that Yisrael afal pishachata Yisrael hu, a Jew, even though he has sinned, remains a Jew, and that there is an innate tendency towards altruism even in the heart of the spiritual lepers. Pasuk Tet. Pasuk Tet of the Haftorah tells us the turnaround. Yisrael afal pishachata Yisrael hu. The Arba Mutzorayim, even though at their core they were on their outside, they were sinners, in their hearts, they were altruistic, holy, and spiritual Jews. Basically, what Rav Aaron Soloveitchik is saying would be what like Hasidim would call a pintaliyid. Everybody has it inside them. Sometimes it's buried a little bit deeper. Sometimes it takes a little bit more to get there. Rav Aaron says that much like our Haftorah, there is always a chance for Jews to be saved, and Geula can come in any place, and sometimes Geula comes from the most unlikely of sources. And this is consistent with our Gemara that we started off with. The Gemara in Sanhedrin that Eliyahu HaNavi says, if you want to find Melech HaMashiach, where does he live? He lives Bein HaMetzorayim. So the question is, though, is that really where Mashiach is going to come? You know, when we talk about Mashiach and we think who Mashiach is, we don't think of him as the homeless guy, the guy that the schnurrer that comes to shul, who's wearing tattered clothing. We think of him as somebody royal. He's a Malchus Beis David. Which one is it? So I want to share with you, and with this we'll wrap it up. I want to share with you an idea that Rav Amital said. Rav Amital was the founder of Yeshiva Har Etzion. He was, in 1967, he came back to the Gush that had been destroyed just short of the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948 and laid desolate for 19 years. Rav Amital was a special man because in addition to being an Israeli soldier in the Independence Day War in 1948, and he might have served again in 56, I don't know, I don't remember, Rav Amital also was a Holocaust survivor. And this is what Rav Amital says. Rav Amital says, after the Shoah, I would never have the gall to say this, but Rav Amital as a Holocaust survivor could say this much more clearly. After the Shoah, a flawed Geula worked. A partial Geula, even a partial Geula, could come anyway. The Geula that came after the Holocaust was not a Geula Shleima, and it could come anyway. And it could come through not the holiest of sources. It could come through Apikorsam Mitzorayim. It was okay. Because that Geula was similar to Ashur and the Mitzorayim. Ashur and the Mitzorayim, it's true. They were saved by Mitzorayim. But was that a Geula Shleima? It wasn't a Geula Shleima. Because anybody that knows the story knows that Ashur is going to come back again. Just a few years later. And when Ashur comes back the second time, the northern kingdom is not spared. The northern kingdom is destroyed and is exiled. And then it's only by the good graces of God that at the last minute, Chizkiyahu HaMelech in the southern kingdom is saved. The northern kingdom was not a Geula Shleima. It was a partial Geula. And partial Geula can come anyway. But for the Geula Shleima, for the real one, for the full one, it can't come that way. And that's when we go back to the words of Rachel Bluestein, the famous Israeli poet, so powerful, where she says, when Shomron is under siege again, she says, Achanilo oveb suragu ula imipi mitzorahi tavo. I refuse to accept Geula or even the words and the coming of Geula if it's going to come from the words in the mouth of Mitzorah, but rather HaTahor Yevaser. I beg that it should come from a pure place. Yigal HaTahor, and that the Tahor person should come and share that. Im Yadolom Titzali Go'ol Azni Charli Lin Poldim Tzukada Matzor. And if it can't, then I would rather die in the galus. And then she ends Or Leom B'Sura Gadol. But we're waiting, and it's the night before the great redemption. Rav Amital concludes that that's what we need. If we want the Geula Shleima to come, if we really want the real Geula to come, then we need to be idealistic. And we need to remember it's not going to come from a Tamei source. It has to come from the holiest and the purest of sources. And therefore, I end with the bracha that Amir Tzashem, the Geula Shleima, should come in such a way that we hope, like Rav Amital says, it's going to come from the best and the purest of places. And God willing, we should see it really soon. Amen. Ken Yehi Ratzon.